Welcome to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services, a show about coping with getting older ourselves and dealing with our aging parents. If you have questions about how to cope with these stresses, call Scott at 877-960-9960. Now, here's Scott.
Welcome, everybody. Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, So Is My Mom. We're so glad that you're with us tonight. If you're on 95.9 and you're in the Palm Beaches, we are excited that you are here tonight, and I promise you, you're in for a great show. Of course, if you're on 106.9 in the Treasure Coast, you too are in for a great show because it's the same show. But anyway, we are thrilled. Deep brain stimulation. What is deep brain stimulation? What is it? Who needs it? Why does anybody need it? And who can even do that? Well, one of my guests and I can answer most of those questions, and my other guest can tell you all about it because she's lived through it and is thriving. Dr. Jonathan Jaggett is here along with one of his successful patients, Suzanne, and I can't wait for you to hear what they're going to say tonight because it is fascinating both from a patient's perspective and from a procedure perspective. It's really an unbelievable process, and I promise you, you will learn something tonight. So don't go away. We're going to get there in just a minute. Meanwhile, before we get to them, vaccines. Get your vaccine. Get your shot. More and more people are. We're fortunate here that if you're typically listening to my show, you likely are now eligible. I encourage you to do that. We were talking around the table here tonight that it is liberating to have gotten both your first and second shot, gone through those 2 weeks, and now with the new CDC guidelines, who knows? You could even hug your grandchildren again. So please do that. And today is International Women's Day, and I just want to say thank you to all the women out there. I would say all the women I've known and loved, but my wife is here, so I won't go there. and beside which, we're high school sweethearts, so it wouldn't be fair. Anyway, but now let me get to my guest, because that is the reason you're here tonight. Dr. Jonathan Jaggett is a professor of clinical neurosurgery at the University of Miami. He specializes in functional and epilepsy neurosurgery and is the neurosurgical director of the Deep Brain Stimulation Program, which is a National Parkinson's Disease Center of Excellence. Dr. Jaggett has performed over 1,000 of these procedures for both Parkinson's disease and for essential tremor. He received his medical degree from New York Medical College in 1994 and received his neurosurgical training at the University of Miami, joining the faculty in 2001. He has published a number of articles on deep brain stimulation, as well as authored a number of book chapters. And Suzanne is one of his most successful cases, and she has agreed to be here tonight to talk about it from a patient's point of view. And it's rare that I have the ability to talk to both the practitioner and to the patient, and even rarer that everybody is as successful as this team has been. So both of you, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott. Happy to be here.
Thank you. Dr. Jaggett, why don't we start with you and start with the basic. What is deep brain stimulation?
So, you know, deep brain stimulation, first let me say deep brain stimulation has been around for a number of years now. There's, nothing experimental about this therapy. This is a unique device, very similar to a pacemaker. I always find it strange that, you know, people are very familiar with pacemakers. They've seen these devices and they all know that it's, you know, takes care of cardiac arrhythmias. This is nothing more than a pacemaker for the brain, and it's very, very effective for those suffering with Parkinson's disease, movement disorders. Changes their quality of life. And what it consists of is a generator that sits in the chest wall. That generator is connected to two wires. Each of those wires enter the brain through small holes through the skull and go to deep areas of the brain and just provide stimulation around the clock to these deep areas. And by doing so, correct a lot of the issues that Parkinson patients are dealing with.
And those would, so who needs it? Is it somebody with extreme tremors? Is it somebody with minor tremors? Is it everybody with tremors? Or is it targeted?
So that's a great question. It does not work for everybody the same. It doesn't work for all symptoms of Parkinson's disease. The symptoms it's likely to work for are the ones like tremors, slowness of movement, rigidity, a lot of the muscle cramping Parkinson patients deal with on a regular basis. And then there are a slew of symptoms that it's not effective for, like balance. You know, Parkinson patients have difficulty with the quality of their voice, doesn't help with that. So it requires an extensive workup to figure out whether or not you have the right symptoms for this device.
And are there many Parkinson's patients who will never become candidates for this?
I would say more the majority of Parkinson's patients probably would be candidates for this procedure. I think the bigger issue is getting the word out that this therapy exists, that it's producing consistent results. That's the biggest roadblock to having a larger number of patients have this therapy.
And you alluded to it in the beginning. This is not a new procedure. It's been around for a while?
A long time. This is going on now about 27, 30 years that this device has been around.
Wow.
So it's nothing new. But again, even though it's been around for so long, it's very rarely used.
That's amazing to me. And Suzanne, you know, I've talked to you last week, and I had a chance to talk to you before the show tonight. You're kind of an amazing story, but where does the story begin? Tell me how this all started for you.
Yes, that's interesting. Never thought in a million years at 47 years old with a 13 and 14-year-old children that I could have had Parkinson's disease. I started having like a vibration in my left leg, and it would be only certain times intermittently. And I went to my regular annual checkup with my primary care physician, and I said, you know, at the end of the checkup, I said, you know, by the way, I have this little vibration in my leg, and I don't think it's anything, but, you know, I just thought I should mention it. So she said, it's probably a pinched nerve, but just out of, you know, just to be careful, why don't I send you to a neurologist? So I went to the neurologist, and she said, after talking to me for 5 minutes and asking me if anybody in my family had Parkinson's, my uncle did, my first cousin did on my maternal side, and she said, you have Parkinson's disease. Anyway, I went into a spiraling freak out.
I don't blame you.
I started looking on the computer, and I realized that in 5 years, I'm probably going to be in a wheelchair, that my life is going to be over, and I was in a state of depression. I lost weight. I was sick about it. I couldn't even say the word. I never even told my own mother for 5 years that I had Parkinson's disease, and most of the time, I couldn't even say to someone, I have Parkinson's disease, because I would cry when I said it. So anyway, that's basically where it began. The tremor, I also had some rigidity, you know, and I also had some stiffness. But it wasn't so bad at first. It started to progressively get worse.
And so you started to do your homework. I think this is a point that I think you both want to make. You went to a neurologist who diagnosed you with Parkinson's, who was not a movement specialist.
No, but I immediately made an appointment, which took 3 months to get in at the University of Miami, because I knew that they were a state-of-art, you know, facility and a facility of excellence in Parkinson's disease. So I met with a movement disorder specialist a few months later, and I thought for sure he was going to tell me that it was in my head that I didn't have Parkinson's disease, but in fact he told me I did, and that I could live my life, and that I had very mild case and it was very early, and that I should just exercise.
And Dr. Jagat, that's probably fair. I don't know this, but that's probably a fairly typical story. There's something not right. You go to your primary care. He says, yeah, I don't really know. Why don't you go get it checked out? We'll do an MRI. You go to a neurosurgeon. And then, bang, you get hit between the eyes with that diagnosis. Is that the most common?
Yeah, I mean, you know, most patients who suffer with Parkinson's disease will tell you, if you go all the way back to the beginning, they'll even tell you that even prior to their diagnosis, right, they already had problems for sometimes 2 or 3 years before they even, you know, seek, you know, a neurologist's opinion and get formally diagnosed. So it's a very subtle thing in the beginning, but, you know, over the years it progresses. And one of the biggest issues, right, is that we have phenomenal medications for Parkinson's disease. They work extremely well. Unfortunately, at about 5 years, and on average about 5 years, 50% of patients suffering with Parkinson's disease start having major problems from the medication itself. And it's really at that time point that you have to start thinking about more invasive therapy like deep brain stimulation. And what is sad to me sometimes is that, you know, like you had mentioned, Scott, you know, Parkinson patients do a lot of research. They're very educated people. If you don't do your own research, very often you don't find your way to a neurosurgeon. It's not one of those things that's just, you know, recommended by your neurologist for, you know, reasons that are unknown to me. But you really have to be on top of your own care, and you typically get this far by being educated and doing your own research.
And that's a dual-edged sword too, right? Because Dr. Google can send you down a lot of different pathways that are not all that,
yeah,
you know.
That's right. That's correct.
I have to think that when you were first diagnosed, Suzanne, the sense of panic and dread had to be overwhelming. Plus, you were only 47.
Yeah.
I think most people think of Parkinson's as a disease of the elderly. And
I've got to tell you, Scott, it's not. I think there are elderly people, but they've had it for 20 years.
Right.
You know, right. I did a lot of my own research, and I joined a bunch of Facebook groups of people with Parkinson's, people that had DBS, and people write in there, how old were you when you got diagnosed? And just like me, people that are 45, 50, 35, 40, they don't go run and tell everybody they have Parkinson's disease. It's embarrassing. You know, I used to go to the store, and sometimes my medicine would kick off, and I couldn't walk well. And people would say, hey, are you okay? Why are you walking like that? And I'd say, oh, I hurt my back, or I hurt my foot, or, you know, I'd come up with some excuses, because it's not something you want to run around at 47, 50 years old and tell people. So what I've noticed is pages and pages of people, 32, they got diagnosed, 35, 38, 45, 42, 52. I've spoken to a lot of people, that are contemplating DBS because I want to help them. And they say, yeah, well, I'm 65 now, but I've had it for 17 years.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of people need to raise their families and need to work, and they don't want to run around and tell people that they have Parkinson's. So it's not just your grandfather's disease.
And so, Dr. Jagat, that brings up about 25 questions to me. One is, you mentioned that, you know, there is kind of a lifespan on the medication side of the medications, and you said the medications are typically very effective. So what is happening to the patient that brings them to see you to contemplate deep brain stimulation? Is the medication ceasing to work? Are they and is this then the only other option?
Right. So that also is a great question. Patients ask me all the time, you know, why should I do deep brain stimulation and when should I do it? You know, and the bigger question is when. You know, why? You know, how will I know when I need deep brain stimulation? And it is at that point where the medication is problematic. That's where you're sort of in a vicious cycle at that point. So what happens with Parkinson's disease is you take your medication when you're newly diagnosed, you have a great result about 5 years into the disease, that window of efficacy starts to close. So where your medication used to last 4 or 5 hours very predictably, 5 years in, now it's lasting 1 hour, okay? And then it even gets worse because now you get to a point where you take your medication expecting it to work for 2-3 hours. So you plan how you're gonna go out to dinner or whatever. You find yourself in a restaurant and it didn't last 3 hours that you were used to. Just all of a sudden you're off, you know, in an hour, frozen, can't move in the restaurant. So it's at that time point where, you know, you really need to think about deep brain stimulation, because what happens is you go to your doctor, your neurologist, and what does your neurologist do when your symptoms start becoming worse and the medication isn't working? Start to increase the medication, right? But if you increase the medication, you start getting side effects from too much dopamine. You know, all of us have seen, like, Michael J. Fox, these sort of uncontrollable writhing movements. Right. You start to get that as a result of increasing the medication. So when you start seeing that, neurologist says to you, okay, reduce your medication again. And now you're frozen again and you can't move. So this sort of vicious cycle can only be broken by deep brain stimulation. There is no path forward in 2021 to reclaim quality of life other than deep brain stimulation at that point. So that's the critical moment.
So, I mean, that's really helpful. So if the medication has a life span, right, does the efficacy of deep brain stimulation have a lifespan, or does it last forever? I mean, given that it's 25 or 30 years old now.
So the beautiful thing about these devices is that they're very versatile. They can be programmed almost like a computer. You can change the settings, and by changing the settings, you can recapture, you know, benefit. So as your disease progresses, you start to see a tremor again. You see your neurologist. You make some adjustments on the device, and you recapture that benefit again, okay? Now, as your disease progresses, you may develop symptoms that deep brain stimulation doesn't help. And ultimately, you may feel slightly worse if that happens. But the DBS is always working in the background, and it's always minimizing the symptoms that it can minimize. And it's interesting because, you know, you have patients come back after 12 years of having DBS, and some of them will say to me, you know, I'm not sure this is working so well anymore because I don't feel the way I felt 12 years ago. It worked great back then. And all you have to do is turn off the device, and I'll tell you, within like 10 minutes, every patient sort of begs you to have it turned back on, and they realize, wow, I can't believe what this is actually doing for me in the background after 10 years. So,
plus they're 10 years older, and so some of what they're feeling may be attributable to that as well.
But the point is, that therapy is still working. 10 years, I mean, it's a long-standing result.
That's amazing to me. Now, Suzanne, you were on medication. Was it starting not to work as effectively? Is that why?
The biggest problem was inconsistency. And those that have Parkinson's know that it's a roller coaster ride. I'd wake up in the morning, I'd take a pill, I'd feel okay for an hour or two. I didn't know how long it would take for the pill to take effect. I didn't know how long I would get out of the pill. So I'd run around the house doing all the things I needed to do because I knew I was going to go down again. And then I'd take another pill, and I didn't know how long that was going to take to get effect, and I didn't know how long it was going to last, so I'd do whatever I could when I got, and you could feel it. Like, I could be walking really slow and difficult with walking, and then all of a sudden, I'd start moving really fast and walking. But on the same sense, when it turned off, I could, like, be walking fine into a restaurant, let's say with my husband, sit down for dinner, and by the time I was ready to leave the restaurant, I couldn't walk almost to the car.
Wow.
One of the significant things was before my surgery, I went to a wedding with my husband and some of his work colleagues, and none of them knew that I had Parkinson's. And they all had appetizers, and I had to time my medicine to try to be able to, you know, last as long as I could without too much medicine, because then you get side effects. I had to worry about who was going to be there and what they were going to see, you know, if my symptoms were going to show. I couldn't eat the appetizers because then I would have protein that interfered with my medicine. So I took the pill at just the right time and tried to last as long as I could. And as soon as I felt the medicine was wearing off, told my husband it's time to go.
Wow.
So it was ruling my life.
Yeah. It's really bad. How long had you been diagnosed before you decided to go through deep brain stimulation?
Six and a half years.
So almost exactly the time frame that we're talking about.
That's right.
That is really remarkable. You know, one of the things that we haven't talked about at all is the procedure, which of course we're going to do very soon. I think it's for those of you who are listening, you really want to stick around for this, because what we haven't told you yet is that this is a brain surgery that you are awake for. I always find that amazing to contemplate, but we're going to let Dr. Jagat explain it, and we're going to let Suzanne explain what it was like to be awake while somebody was operating on her brain. So that's really important. And then we're going to talk about how quickly you can expect results, what those results are like. Trust me when I tell you, we have so much more. So if you're just tuning in, of course, this is Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. For you new listeners, we're here every Monday night talking about issues that confront boomers and their parents. For those of you who are regular listeners, we're still here every Monday night talking about the same things. We're excited that you're with us. We're on 95.9 in the Palm Beaches. We're at 106.9 on the Treasure Coast. We also simulcast anywhere you are, so you have no excuse not to listen. iHeartRadio is another way to pick us up, and then we're going to show you how you can recapture the show tomorrow after we finish. But in the meantime, if you enjoyed the show so far but have questions for my guests, the good news is you can call us. You can call us at 877-960-9960. That's 877-960-9960.
I'm here with Allison from Comfort Care Senior Services. Allison, at Comfort Care, you guys are proud to be a family-owned and operated business.
That's right, Mike. It's myself and my husband, Tino, my sister, Melissa, and her husband, Joe, and my parents, Irene and Scott Greenberg. As you can tell by six family members being able to work together, family is extremely important to us. Our clients often have kids that live out of state or even overseas, and those extended family members want to have the comfort of being able to contact a family member at any time to follow up on how mom or dad is doing. While you are able to reach a family member at any time, our office staff is truly part of our extended family. They monitor the phones 24/7 in case of an emergency and are empowered to make decisions that are in the best interest of the client. Because at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of your condition, that determines the quality of life. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620. Or visit our website at palmbeach.comfortcare.com. That's palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
Do your parents live in South Florida? We know it can be difficult to be there for them when you live far away. As your parents get older, things can change in an instant. Are you prepared?
Finding a trusted local expert to coordinate and provide care makes all the difference. Eldercare 360 can provide you and your family the proper guidance, support, and resources to assist you and your loved ones with their daily activities of living with healthcare challenges.
As a patient advocate, Eldercare 360 brings together a team of patient-focused, caring professionals with decades of experience. Call us to see how we can help before the crisis at 561-713-1800.
Make Eldercare 360 part of your team. Eldercare 360, patient advocacy, coordination of services, and full circle of care. 561-713-1800.
Hi, I'm Laura Olivares, the president of Silver Solutions, the senior-focused home services company. Unfortunately, COVID-19 continues to be a reality for too many of us. But thankfully, every day, more and more of our older adults are getting protected by the vaccine. At Silver Solutions, we pride ourselves on protecting older adults as well, from safety improvements to downsizing to emptying the home after the loss of your loved one. Silver Solutions is here to help you move forward with ease and confidence. To find out more, call us today at 877-AGE-SAFE. That's 877-AGE-SAFE. Or visit us online at silversolutions.com. Our team is bonded, insured, and follows rigorous CDC guidelines, including the full use of PPE. Life can bring the unexpected, but when it comes to making growing older safer and less stressful, you can count on us, Silver Solutions.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. We're glad that you are here. We have a most fascinating show tonight. We're talking about deep brain stimulation, which is a procedure to help Parkinson's patients who are struggling primarily with tremors, but with other symptoms as well, really rid themselves of those symptoms. Deep brain stimulation is not massage. It's open surgery. And we're going to talk about that with my guest, Dr. Jonathan Jaggett from the University of Miami. He is the professor of clinical neurosurgery at the University of Miami. And one of his most successful cases, Suzanne, is here. She's a patient who has been describing her pathway down the Parkinson's trail, and it's really a fascinating story, and the both of them here are terrific in giving us the kind of information. Dr. Jaggett, I teased it before the break. This is brain surgery in every sense of the word, and it's open, and patients are awake.
Yeah, patients are awake. So the way to look at this, I think, is, you know, there's in the spectrum of neurosurgical procedures that are done out there, yeah, it's definitely brain surgery, and it should never be minimized. But it is truly done in a minimally invasive way. And what I mean by minimally invasive is, and I guess, you know, Suzanne can corroborate this, you know, you come in the hospital and you're out of the hospital within 24 hours. This is not like a prolonged stay in the hospital. I think most patients don't have an excessive amount of discomfort after the surgery. They typically go home. I've had patients go home on extra strength Tylenol. So it really is minimally invasive in that respect, but you're right, you're awake. And obviously that can be very anxiety provoking. Obviously, when we say you're awake, you're not awake, you know, having a cup of coffee. You're sedated. There's an anesthesiologist in the room. You are awake at certain times when we need to examine you. The whole purpose of the surgery, right, is to get two wires into very, very small, deep nuclei of the brain on the order of about 6 millimeters in size. So you can imagine it has to be precise. You never want to leave the operating room with a less than perfectly placed lead. And the way to accomplish that is to what? It's to test it in the operating room. It's to actually turn it on and ask the patient and examine the patient and get feedback from the patient telling you, yeah, you know, I feel like I feel when my medications are working. I feel loose. My tremor's gone. And these are visible things you can see. So that's why you need to be awake. Again, I can tell you after doing this for 15 years, I don't think I've ever been unable to get somebody through one of these awake surgeries. So as bad as it sounds, it's pretty well tolerated.
So I'm going to ask Suzanne to corroborate as you suggested, but I would have to say from your perspective, not only do you need the skill to perform the mechanics, but you need to be really concerned with your patient's anxiety level, which I have to think in some cases has to be off the charts.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, thanks to the help of the anesthesiologist, you know, there's constant communication. Everybody's doing their job. It's almost like a choreographed, you know, dance. I mean, we've been doing it for 15 years. We've got the same anesthesiologist, the same people in the operating room, the same nurses. We all know what our places are. We know we all know what we're doing. And it all comes together in a way that really keeps the patient's anxiety level down and keeps the patient focused when they need to be focused in order to give us the information they need. The surgery itself, it is done in two surgeries, actually. The first surgery is the one done awake. It takes about 2 to maybe 4 hours. One night in the hospital, you come back a week later for a same-day surgery. That's when we implant all the external parts, external to the brain, generator, wires in the neck, connect everything, and that surgery, you go home the same day. So literally, this whole process is about a 24-hour stay in the hospital.
That's amazing. And Suzanne, were you nervous? I mean, you had to be.
I was
terrified.
Nervous, but honestly, I was more nervous about living my life the way it was going. So right. I was so excited when I got approved for the surgery because it was my chance to feel better without taking more meds and therefore having more side effects from the meds. And I've actually been off all medicines for Parkinson's for almost 3 years now since the surgery. And as you can see, you don't really know I have Parkinson's if you met me on the street, whereas before I was always trying to hide it. The awakeness about the surgery, in some ways it was really good because, first of all, you're sedated. You're not, you know, they give you anesthesia. Sometimes I fell asleep and I'd wake back up. As a matter of fact, one time I heard Dr. Jagan say something about me snoring, so I woke up. The good news about being awake is I could see that it was working. My legs were shaking like crazy, and then they did intraoperative testing, and I felt my legs stop shaking. So I knew it worked. It was really not painful. I had a headache that night, which should be expected. But other than that, it really wasn't so bad.
And in anticipation, because you have to schedule this out, you got to go through pre-op. I'm sure you go through even some counseling or something. Did that control your anxiety, increase your anxiety, or were you just bound and determined to do this and knew that it was going to be life-altering?
Well, I wasn't ready to give up my life at 54 years old at the time, and I felt like it was my only chance, like I said. So I'm probably not normal. I was more excited than nervous about it. And I think every Parkinson's patient that does DBS gets to a point where they say, it's time. And after I went for my first consultation, although it took 4 months before I actually got the surgery, I would have gone in the next day. So I was at that point already.
Yeah, and I think that's probably, I mean, I don't know this, but I would guess that that is how most people get to that place in their head that, you know, that they can't do this anymore, right. And this is the only option that they have. And we're going to talk more about Parkinson's disease. We're going to talk more about hesitancy. We're going to talk about, you know, what precisely this is. Then we're going to talk about some of the other things that both Suzanne experienced and Dr. Jagat does. So if you have questions for them or me, the good news is you can call us at 877-960-9960. That's 877-960-9960.
I'm here with Tino from Comfort Care Senior Services. Tino, you train all of your caregivers on how to deal with those who are struggling with Alzheimer's disease, right?
I do, Mike. This disease process is frightening for everyone, and change is the scariest thing for most people. Where we should start is changing the way we think. People are not dying from Alzheimer's disease. They are living with it. And we have to figure out a way for them to keep on living their best life possible. I always say activities of daily living keep people alive. Meaningful activities is what gives people a life worth living. Properly training caregivers on all sorts of dementia is very important. Learning about behavior modification techniques, avoiding triggers, tapping into the abilities that are preserved the longest with people with dementia, and figuring out what's important to them are all vital tools caregivers need to understand. Remember, it's about the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition that determines their quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620 or visit us on the web at palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
I'm here with Allison from Comfort Care Senior Services. Allison, at Comfort Care, you guys really look at every client differently.
Activities of daily living keep people alive. Meaningful activities give people a life worth living. That's why at Comfort Care, we complete a social history for our clients. It taps into one's life story to help caregivers know more about who this person was and, quite frankly, still is. It asks questions like, what did you do for a living? What volunteer work did you do? What was your favorite book or movie? Were you in the military? And the list goes on. Understanding background like this is helpful in creating meaningful activities. For example, if someone was a cartographer in the Army, perhaps a trip to the library to look at old maps of where they were station might be an interesting activity. If someone were an avid golfer, perhaps a makeshift putting green might be a fun outing. We couple that with a day in the life, which asks more of the daily routine questions, so a caregiver coming in is already familiar with the schedule. It makes the adjustment to having a caregiver that much easier. Caregivers want to help their clients live their best life possible. Being armed with the right information can help, because at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines your quality of life. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. We're thrilled that you're with us tonight. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about deep brain stimulation for people struggling with Parkinson's disease. It's a most fascinating process. I'm here tonight with Dr. Jonathan Jagged from the University of Miami. He is a professor of clinical neurosurgery. He's done thousands of these deep brain stimulation and been learning about the process. And also here tonight is one of his success stories. Suzanne is here, and she is a patient who has gone through deep brain stimulation surgery. And we were explaining it right before the break about the fact that it is that the patients are awake during this brain surgery, because it's critical that they contribute the information and tell the doctor how it's impacting them during the course of the surgery. But we didn't spend much time in terms of the preparation for this. Is there a big preparatory process for this?
It's an extensive process. You know, again, our goal is to make sure that if you're going to go through brain surgery, that you are going to benefit from this procedure. And that takes quite an extensive preoperative workup in order to ensure that you will benefit. That workup is primarily done by a movement disorder neurologist. It involves the administration of a few different tests, as well as you need a neuropsychological battery performed. One of the only contraindications to doing this type of procedure is dementia, cognitive, you know, problems, which patients do suffer with Parkinson's, a subset do. So we need to exclude that. That process, on average, takes a couple of months to do in its entirety. And obviously what we're looking for is having the right constellation of symptoms, the tremor, the rigidity, the bradykinesia or slowness of movement we discussed, muscle cramping. What I like to tell patients is, you know, at any stage in their disease, so in 2021, patients know themselves the best. They know how they feel when they're feeling the best they can feel throughout the day. What deep brain stimulation is designed to do is it's designed to make you feel that way with more consistency. None of this, what we've been describing for the past half hour, this sort of, you know, taken by surprise when the medication stops working. Once you've got the stimulation on in the background, that goes away. You can predict with more certainty that you're going to be good throughout the day, that you're going to be able to function at a reasonable level, and it allows you to reduce your medication on average up to about 20 to 50%. And you can see in Suzanne's case, which is amazing, she's been off the medication completely for 3 years.
Wow. So Other than cognitive impairment associated with Parkinson's or for another reason, is that the only exclusion typically?
That is the only absolute contraindication. The only other thing that would exclude you is if I, as a surgeon, didn't think that you would be able to tolerate the surgery, if you had a medical condition that precluded you from being a good candidate. Obviously, our goal is to maintain a very low risk profile. We don't take any chances. You know, you've got to meet certain criteria to ensure that you're the lowest risk you can be.
So this may be completely unfair. Well, it is unfair, but I'll ask it anyway. There are people who obviously don't want to do this. And you mentioned his name before, but I think about Michael J. Fox, who's had this for years, and he clearly hasn't gone through this disease. So there are people who, and I know you don't know anything about Michael J. Fox. I get that. There's no way you could. So there are people who don't want to go down this road, or for some reason opt not to.
I think that the only reason that, you know, with my experience over the last 15 years and what I've seen is outcomes and the consistency of these outcomes and how it's life-changing, the only reason I can assume people don't want to do this is they just don't know enough about it. I think the best thing somebody can do is be in a room with people who have had it done, who can talk to them, they can see the result. They can talk to them about how, you know, what the surgery was like. And I think you just need to, you know, get that information to give yourself a comfort level to take that step, which is ultimately going to improve your quality of life tremendously.
And Suzanne, you did an awful lot of homework, a lot of research, you did a lot of investigation, and you ended up at the University of Miami because you had done your research. And I know you feel very strongly you're not here to promote the University of Miami. No. I understand that. But you went there. Can you explain how you got there and
sure.
what you were looking for?
Well, first of all, you don't want to have deep brain stimulation surgery unless you have someone that does that an awful lot.
Right.
There's not that many centers of excellence, and there's not that many surgeons that have done this, you know, on a weekly basis.
Right.
So I had heard about Dr. Jagan's reputation in the University of Miami, and I remember once my mom said, "Can't you find a place closer to you?" I said, "Would you rather me go to a hospital that's done three deep brain stimulations, or should I drive an hour so I could be at a hospital that's done 1,000 of them?" As far as the research goes and talking to DBS patients, I joined some social media groups and I spoke to 25, 30 patients before I went through this process and asked them how it went for them. And I heard people's stories, a woman who told me that she needed a water ski tow rope to get herself out of bed that they had propped for her, that went in for the first programming session in a wheelchair and walked out and went to lunch. And I heard so many stories, and even though I had a doctor who wasn't a pro, you know, proponent of DBS surgery, I said, all these people are not lying to me of how it's changed their lives. And just the other day, Scott, I went to get a pedicure, and my daughter said to me, you know, before DBS, you couldn't even get a pedicure. My legs would shake. And if my legs were shaking and I'm trying to get a pedicure, just enjoy a nice pedicure, the woman would yell at me to relax.
Right.
And the more she'd yell at me, the more my legs would shake. So my daughter said to me, you know, before DBS, you couldn't even enjoy a pedicure. Isn't it nice you could go and enjoy a pedicure now?
You know, it's funny. I talk a lot on the radio show about some chronic diseases, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's disease, MS, you know, a lot of people describe their loved ones as dying of those diseases. What we lose sight of the fact is that people aren't dying of those diseases. They're living with those diseases. And what you're describing is quality of life. And what you're describing, Dr. Jagan, and you, Suzanne, is that in this case, deep brain stimulation restored your quality of life, at least as I understand it.
Yeah, I can go to a wedding with my husband, well, not during COVID, but, you know, I can enjoy going to dinner and not having to worry if I'm going to make it out to the car afterwards. I can enjoy having a glass of wine at dinner. You know, I can go for a pedicure. I can go for a massage. I can do some of the things that I used to enjoy that was stripped from me from this disease. I travel. I mean, a few years after I was diagnosed, I told my husband that I wanted to take the kids and go to South Africa. And I said, look, I don't know how long I have because I really felt my days were numbered. And then maybe I'd have 5 good years. He said, plan a trip to South Africa. So we took the kids and we went because I felt like my days were numbered. And now I feel like I've got a new extension on life.
Yeah. This is life-changing. Life-changing. I can't stress it enough. I mean, it's just amazing to see the night and day difference before and after these types of surgeries. It's unbelievable.
No, when I listen to this, I mean, I often have physicians on the radio telling me this, but I rarely have patients on, and so it's really fascinating. This is Scott Greenberg, and you're listening to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, So Is My Mom. I'm here tonight with Dr. Jonathan Jagged, who is a neurosurgeon specializing in deep brain stimulation surgery at the University of Miami. I'm going to give you contact information as soon as we come back. I'm also here with one of his success stories. Suzanne is a patient who went through deep brain stimulation. And if you've been listening, you have heard just how life-altering this is. And honestly, the story is very powerful, and I'm glad that you're with us tonight. If you'd like to ask any questions, you can call Dr. Jagged and Suzanne or me, 877-960-9960. It's 877-960-9960.
Hi, I'm Laura Olivares, the president of Silver Solutions, the senior-focused home services company. Unfortunately, COVID-19 continues to be a reality for too many of us. But thankfully, every day, more and more of our older adults are getting protected by the vaccine. At Silver Solutions, we pride ourselves on protecting older adults as well, from safety improvements to downsizing to emptying the home after the loss of your loved one. Silver Solutions is here to help you move forward with ease and confidence. To find out more, call us today at 877-AGE-SAFE. That's 877-AGE-SAFE. Or visit us online at silversolutions.com. Our team is bonded, insured, and follows rigorous CDC guidelines, including the full use of PPE. Life can bring the unexpected, but when it comes to making growing older safer and less stressful, you can count on us, Silver Solutions.
Do your parents live in South Florida? We know it can be difficult to be there for them when you live far away. As your parents get older, things can change in an instant. Are you prepared?
Finding a trusted local expert to coordinate and provide care makes all the difference. ElderCare 360 can provide you and your family the proper guidance, support, and resources to assist you and your loved ones with their daily activities of living with healthcare challenges.
As a patient advocate, ElderCare 360 brings together a team of patient-focused, caring professionals with decades of experience. Call us to see how we can help before the crisis at 561-713-1800.
Make ElderCare 360 part of your team. ElderCare 360, patient advocacy, coordination of services, and full circle of care. 561-713-1800.
I'm here with Scott Greenberg from Comfort Care Senior Services. Scott, you're very involved when it comes to the senior community.
That's right, Mike. We firmly believe that involvement in the community, giving back to the community, comes back to us in many, many ways. One of the ways it comes back to us is in our understanding of what's going on, what's new, what's trending. So we're very involved in the guardianship community, for example. We're involved in Alzheimer's community care, in the Alzheimer's Association, in Parkinson's. We run support groups. Basically, what I'm saying is that we want to be a part of the community in ways that we just don't receive benefit, but that we can give benefit as well. It's very important for us to understand the needs of the entire community and the needs of other people who are providing services. It is only through that that we can ensure that we provide the best care possible. Remember, Mike, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines the quality of their life. So remember, let our family take care of your family and call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620, or look us up on the web at palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, and So Is My Mom, with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. Again, we're thrilled that you are with us, and I'm thrilled to be here tonight because I have two unbelievable guests. Dr. Jonathan Jagged is here. He is a neurosurgeon specializing in deep brain stimulation out of the University of Miami, and we're not here to promote anybody in particular, but as we have said a number of times, the University of Miami is, in fact, a center of excellence for deep brain stimulation. And I'm going to ask Dr. Jagged to talk more about the difference in neurosurgeons who do this versus neurosurgeons who do something else. So while I'm at it, if you want to reach Dr. Jagged, let me give you the contact information. Because he doesn't want to, but I'm going to give it to him anyway. It's area code 305-243-6732. That's the direct number into the DBS Center of Excellence, I guess. And the person who you will speak to is Kenya Moreno. She, I guess, is the person who runs the show there. If you want to reach her by email, it is kmoreno2@med.miami.edu. kmoreno2@med.miami.edu. 305-243-6732. And the show tonight couldn't have happened if it were not for the efforts of Amanda and Allison at Boston Scientific, who helped put this together. Again, we're not promoting product, but I would be remiss if I didn't reach out and thank the people at Boston Scientific for helping make this show possible tonight, because this is truly an unbelievable show. I know I said I was going to move to one area, but I had another question that came up. Recovery. We didn't really talk about recovery. Dr. Jagged, what is recovery like after this?
So I don't think it's a big recovery. I'm always surprised at how much patients want to do right after brain surgery. It's really my job to make sure that they remember that they had brain surgery and that they need to, kind of take it easy, take it slow. I've got patients that leave the hospital calling me, I want to go back to work. I'm glad you're feeling great, but, you just had brain surgery. And I think, on average, about a 2 to 3 week period of time where you should kind of take it easy. You can be outside, you can go to dinner, you can do things like that, but no heavy physical activity.
Can you eventually go back to do everything you were doing prior to being diagnosed?
Great question. I mean, I always tell patients, they come to me with a list of, can I do this? Can I do that? I say, listen, this is to improve your quality of life. This is to make you be able to live a life, right, that you couldn't live before. I have zero restrictions. Whatever it is that you want to do, you do.
And is there a mental health component to this, both before and after, or is that not really part of the process? Are there ongoing support groups afterwards? You clearly, Suzanne, talked to a number of patients who had this. HIPAA kind of prevents people in the medical field That's from right. giving out names, so I know you probably found them on Facebook and Google, but is there an ongoing support network?
The University of Miami has its own support group, usually meets once a month, and this support group is great because it brings in patients who are going to be doing deep brain stimulation potentially and puts them in the same room as those who have already had it. And it's amazing just how much they talk to each other, and they get a good feel of what the surgery is, what the expected results are, and I think it really puts patients' minds at ease.
That's great. Suzanne, I assume your recovery was simple?
It wasn't bad. I actually, and she might be listening, my mom stayed with me for a day and I sent her home. Okay. Because you can do things, it's on your head. My biggest part of my recovery was Dr. Jagged had to shave part of my head.
I know you told that story. I love it. Tell everybody what you were
concerned
with.
And then he wouldn't let me wear anything on top of my head, so I couldn't go out. And he said, well, you can go out. You just can't wear anything over the top of your head. So I said, I can't go out until I could wear something on top of my head. So if I could wear a baseball cap, it took a few weeks, a month, before I was able to wear something on top of my head and go to dinner or to a movie. But the recovery itself wasn't bad at all.
I know you told me when we talked in preparation for the show that was the thing you were most upset about. And honestly, I totally got that.
Yeah, for a woman,
I wasn't the least bit surprised.
It's not the favorite part of my day either to tell women that I'm going to be shaving a significant portion of their hair. They never really take it that well.
And actually, I was able to have him shave from the crown forward so that when I was able to wear something on my head, I could wear a baseball cap with my ponytail on the back. And nobody would have known that I didn't have hair on top of my head.
So are there external probes or is everything internal ultimately? Does the Does the head heal completely?
It's all internal. I think if you look at Suzanne, right, you don't know that she has anything.
Right.
So it's all internal. The neurologist who sees you on a regular basis is able to communicate with the device by just putting something over it. And now they even have devices where you don't even have to put anything over it. You just have to be in the same room and via Bluetooth just, you know, communicates. You know, it's amazing. I mean, the technology really, really, really in the past 3 or 4 years has just, you know, gotten exponentially better.
Which highlights, we did mention it earlier, but it's worth repeating. Not every neurosurgeon is the right neurosurgeon for this surgery, correct?
The way I would put it is there are very few places around the country where you have a neurosurgeon who is dedicated to doing this particular type of procedure. You've got, you know, neurosurgeons in the community who are, you know, I hate to say it, they're, and I don't want to offend anybody, but they're like weekend DBS surgeons. So right. They're doing spine surgery, you know, 80% of the time, and then, you know, once every 3 months they'll do a deep brain stimulator. And you know, the results may be good, but, you know, there's nothing more better than consistency, right? There's a learning curve to this. You know, like we mentioned earlier, you have to precisely put these wires in very, very small structures in the brain. And, you know, the more you do this, the better the results are going to be. I can guarantee you that.
If you just tuned in tonight, I've been talking all night about deep brain stimulation. I've been talking with two experts on deep brain stimulation, one who performs the surgery and one who's lived through it. And so they are both expert. Dr. Jonathan Jaggett at the University of Miami clearly knows all there is, not all there is, but knows as much as anybody about what you can do with deep brain stimulation. And Suzanne, one of his patients, knows what it's like to have lived through that. And there is no better expertise than real world experience. And she has been kind enough to share her real world experience with us. If you're just tuned in and you're sorry that you didn't hear this from the beginning, I have really good news for you. You can hear the whole show. We podcast the show. Yes, we do. Tomorrow it'll be up and running around noontime on OMG I'm Getting. Just search OMG I'm Getting. Up we will pop and you will be able to hear this show right from the beginning or any of the other shows that we've done over the years that we've been here. If podcasting isn't your thing, and I understand that, I'm not a big podcaster myself, you can listen on my website, palmbeach.comfortcare.com. ComfortCare, ComfortCare. Don't put a T in there. Spell check wants you to put a T in there. If you put a T in there, you'll never find the radio show. You won't find me. PalmBeach.ComfortCare.com. Of course, there is no reason for you ever to miss the show because you can listen to us on iHeartRadio. Download the app anywhere you are, and you can find us. Just search True Oldies in Palm Beach, and up we will pop. We're here every Monday at 6 o'clock. And, of course, we simulcast TrueOldiesFLA.com, TrueOldiesFLA.com. So there are no excuses. If you're not listening, turn the radio on and tune in. But you can listen to us anytime you want. Next week, and this was not by design, I can't think of anything more opposite than what I'm doing tonight. I'm talking about cranial sacral therapy next week, which is nothing like what we've been talking about tonight. Cranial sacral therapy is a really interesting process, similar, I would call it, soft touch chiropractic. If anybody from Upledger is listening, you can catch your breath. I won't say that next week. But it's entirely different than this and has nothing to do with deep brain stimulation or Parkinson's disease. But next week, we're going to be talking to Mike Morgan from Upledger about cranial sacral therapy. In 2 weeks, we're going to be talking to Jamil Edney from the Area Agency on Aging about elder fraud, abuse, and exploitation. It's real. It affects more people than we want to admit. It happens nearly every day. I guarantee many of my listeners have gotten a call about free medical equipment that they want to send you or about fraud concerning COVID testing or vaccines. It's real. We're going to talk about it with Jamil Edney from the Area Agency on Aging. It's going to be a great show, I promise you, and I encourage you to tune in. But in the few minutes that I have left, I still want to talk with Dr. Jaggett and with Suzanne. Dr. Jaggett, a neurosurgeon specializing in deep brain stimulation, and Susanna, patient who has had that. Susanna, I'll ask you, any regrets?
No. I would have had regrets had I not been approved for the surgery and had it done. And there are no regrets.
Right. Because it's really been a life changer for you, right?
Yes, it has. And life-altering. The best part is being off those dreadful medicines.
And you have not taken any medication. But if I heard you correctly, Dr. Jagged, you said not everybody is as fortunate as she is. So are most people medication-free after this surgery? And does that last? Or do they experience, again, what brought them to you in the first place when the medication stopped working?
Yeah, I mean, this is not the most common result, right? I mean, we've had other patients who have been entirely off medication after this procedure, but again, it's not the normal. The normal is typically about a 20 to maybe 50% reduction in the volume of medication you take throughout a 24-hour period. That's a more reasonable goal. But if you have a great result like Suzanne does, then yeah, I mean, try and get you off the medication for as long as possible. Will it last forever? Who can say? I mean, I would think more likely that you'll start taking the medication at some point again, but think about that gap in time that you haven't taken it, and you start taking it again, those, you know, side effects are going to take a lot longer to kick in again, having taken that break. So I think it's a win-win no matter, you know, how you look at it.
I come to believe, Scott, that the medicines were more toxic than the disease in my place. I mean, I wasn't sleeping. I was having dyskinesia in my leg. It was miserable.
And that's not a comment that I have not heard before in not just Parkinson's, but in other conditions, that oftentimes the side effects of medication can be as debilitating as the disease. But in the case of Parkinson's, what you went through, the symptoms, you know, were really impacted your quality of life.
Well, so you needed the medicine to feel normal. You strived to get that medicine so you could feel okay, and then you only got a little bit of time out of it, and sometimes you couldn't count on it at all.
Right.
And so, you know, at some point, it was almost worse taking the medicines than just dealing with the disease, but you needed those medicines to feel okay for a while.
No, it's astounding. You know, you mentioned Bluetooth. What would we do without Bluetooth anymore?
Right.
Is technology evolving fast here, or is it still fundamentally getting those two probes into the right spot?
No, so technology, both in the device itself and on the planning side of things in the operating room, has really, really gotten better over the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, to the point now where, you know, the good news is that you can actually, you know, attempt to do these surgeries with the patient fully asleep. So if you really have a patient who has, you know, just too much anxiety to do this awake, it can be done asleep, because we have such great planning software now that we can plan these things with more accuracy than we could in the past and try and forgo that sort of intraoperative feedback that you rely on.
It is amazing. You know, I could talk to the two of you for hours, but unfortunately, I can't talk to you for hours because there's another show after here. But you guys have been great, Suzanne. You are a remarkable story and a remarkable person.
Thank you.
And I know you drove a long way to get here, and I truly can't thank you enough for doing this. And more importantly, I'll bet you somebody out there who's listening tonight can't thank you enough either for being here tonight. I really do appreciate it.
If you're listening, go on Facebook and look up DBS for Parkinson's. There's all kinds of groups, and you can get all kinds of information from people that have already had it. And there's nobody better to tell you about Parkinson's and DBS than somebody that's lived through it.
And Dr. Jagged, I mean, you really came a long way. And I am so appreciative. You've been very gracious with your time. And the information, I have no doubt, will impact someone's quality of life. I can't thank you enough. And
appreciate
I didn't mention that she is here, but Allison is here, and not the Allison who is my daughter, but Allison who is Suzanne's daughter. Mm-hmm. And I want to thank you for helping put this together, and so I appreciate that. If you just tuned in, you missed a great show tonight. This is Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. If you're a regular listener, you know that we're here every Monday night from 6 to 7, talking about issues that confront boomers and their parents. If you're a new listener, we're still here every Monday night from 6 to 7, talking about issues that confront boomers and their parents. We'd love to hear from you if you have ideas that have shows that you would like to talk about. We have some unbelievable shows coming up. Tom Minas, who I think, is one of the very best knee surgeons in the country, is going to come back on the show soon. And we're going to be talking about the latest in Alzheimer's research soon. Next week, we're going to be talking about cranial sacral therapy, and then the week after that, elder fraud, abuse, and exploitation. There is no shortage of important information that we hope to bring to you. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank my guests for being here tonight. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. We'll see you next week. Good night, everybody.